everyone. Welcome to A Girl, A Guy, and a Buffy podcast. This is your co-host, Kate Balzer.
And I'm Charles.
And we're super excited for today's episode. We have a very, very special episode. We are focusing on the 25th anniversary of season three and how there are so many events in season three that really have an impact on the rest of the series when you put them all together. And as part of this special episode, we have two very, very special guests joining us as well.
Yes, we felt like we couldn't do this alone because it was just too much to talk about. And we wanted to get some folks in on the discussion. And so we have with us Paige Troxell, who is a Buffy fan and a documentarian, who has a documentary out now called Redheads, who is here to join us. Hi, Paige. How are you?
Good. I feel so honored. How are you guys doing? I'm so excited.
We're good. We're good. We're so excited to have you here. And then we also have Ian Crawford from Slayer Fest 98. How are you?
Hi. Thank you for having me. I am very honored that Paige and I get to be the first guests on your podcast.
Yes, we've never had a guest before. So it's like, I was like, make sure everything's tidy. Like, I'm sorry we don't have a cheese plate though. So I feel...
Paige, let's go. They didn't put out the food for us.
No cheese.
There's no charcuterie board. Sorry.
We do have some bad beer if you want it.
Yes.
Yes.
I wouldn't mind clubbing an X over the head. You know, that'd be okay with me.
It's fine.
Right?
Fire bad, tree pretty. It's all good.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Exactly. That's about all I can do this week. Fire bad, tree pretty. Oh my goodness. So I know on Slayer Fest 98, you all have been sort of chronicling, the 25th anniversary. And I think everyone's been sort of talking about that. What's been your experience like with that? How's that been for you?
I will say covering it we went through it once already and just been like for the Patreon covering like everything as it turns 25. This is the first time I've encountered people who don't like season three, which is wild to me because I feel like it's like
interesting.
What, like, it five is my favorite, but I think three is the best. Like, I think three doesn't have a low point at all. And five, while it's my favorite, a little bit in the middle, it gets like, you know. But yeah, this is the first time I've encountered that. And I will say some people, Trevor Carley, who does another Buffy podcast and does all these like amazing Lego animations, him and his co-host Kristen came on and they actually had some pretty valid points. Like, I could understand, they were like, well, Faith is so unbalanced in the season, like sometimes she's there and then sometimes she's gone for three episodes. Sure. And we don't, like, there's no like consistency with her appearing, and I don't think that takes away from the season, but I did understand that critique. I was like, that's true. And like, they said that they were like on for like Beauty and the Beast, right? So that's like the beginning. And now I've been like so hyper aware of the fact that that's kind of true. Like, Buffy and Faith will like have an argument or a fight, and then she'll be gone for two episodes. And then they're like back to normal and cool. And then they'll have another fight. It's very up and down. But I also do feel like that isn't not like teenage friendships, right? Like, when you're a teenager, sometimes it's just like, oh, we're not friends anymore, and then it's like, oh, we're best friends, you know what I mean? I do feel like that isn't too far from the way friendships go when you're a teen.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that too had to do with Eliza herself, just in her age, because she was younger when she was on there, and so like her availability to be on the show was probably limited too. But
yeah,
I can see where that messes with consistency though.
Yeah, I looked it up, and that's actually, like, the writers have said that that's why she, like, I feel like I always heard that she got emancipated, like, legally emancipated, so she could work, but apparently that wasn't till like, the end of the season when she is in, like, all of the episodes, and I guess that's why.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and, like, I don't know, like, I'm a little bit more forgiving of that, right? Because it's like, well, just, like, they legally could not use her in more scenes, so...
Right. Paige, what's been your experience? When's the last time you rewatched season three?
Me? Oh, man. I used to joke that, like, season three was my favorite season. I would be like, this is my favorite season. Nothing will ever change this. But like Ian says, season five, as I've gotten older, season five is my favorite, but season three is a perfect season. It's the one I know the most. It's the one that I have watched the most. And I recently, like 3 months ago, did another deep dive, another rewatch on it. And so it was fairly recent that I watched it, and I'm currently doing another deep dive. I'm obsessed with the show. I watch it every couple of months, and I'm on season two now. So I'm getting ready to like fall into season three.
So Kate, what about you? What's your overall view of season three?
Yeah, I love season three. It probably used to be my favorite, and then like you guys, season five is my favorite. But they're kind of on par. Like they go neck and neck, like back and forth on which ones. My thing, and I actually felt this way when I watched the season originally, like when it aired on the WB, I had an issue with the inconsistency of the Buffy Angel relationship. Literally to the point where I was like, did I miss an episode? I was like, because it would be like, she'd tell him in one episode, no, we're done. And then like two episodes later, they're like making out. And I was like, what did I miss? And it was like nothing was ever said. There wasn't even a conversation like, oh, I can't stay away from you. Like all I needed was a line.
Until they break up. Like, you are right. Yeah. Like until they break up, that's like the line where it's like, oh, okay, now they're not together. But were they officially dating again? Yeah.
Right. Did they ever actually get back? Like when was the official getting back together?
Right. Yeah.
Right. You know. But it is. It is a great season. And I think, I'm excited to talk about it. And that was sort of the impetus for this conversation is I just recently did an entire series rewatch in prep for starting this podcast, and I had not done a rewatch in a very long time, and I was like, oh my gosh, there are so many things that happened in season three that, you know, some I know that were planned, but some I'm sure weren't. They just ended up building off of it, but like that completely affect the rest of the series, and it's kind of crazy when you like start making the list.
Right.
Yeah.
And we did make a list. We did make, as good Scoobies do, we like to make a list. Yeah, season three for me was, I think it's, I don't know, it still holds as my favorite, I think. Season five, I love season five. But it's really kind of the last time we get the core together, that we have all of them together. The thing that sort of is the heart of the show. And I think we sort of lose that after everyone goes their separate ways, but I just think it's so much fun. It's just one thing after other, and it is truly like your senior year, and it's like all the fun, all the crazy, all the like wild shenanigans, and you know, that you want out of a senior year, you know, including a senior skip day with Bad Girls. And you're just like, I'm out of here. Like I'm hopping out the window. Let's go. I really love season three. I would say that it still holds as my favorite.
You know, I think for season three with me that it was such a pivotal season in this series. But the reason why for me for five is there's just a little bit more of a maturity in five. And I feel like I see that differently. I like Buffy's growth a lot in season five. It ties back to season three a lot too. But I really like her growth and her discovering really who she is and having to take charge in season five. I'm not so much of a fan of season six, but when it comes to then season seven, she really is full force, 100% running the show. And I think a lot of that did start in season three. And in season three, to me, like, doesn't really have a bad episode except for the Zeppo. I'm not a fan of the Zeppo, but like, it doesn't really have a bad episode. And I think that's why it's like, to me, it's deemed like the perfect season. It's the one that the fans seem to think is the favorite as well. Yeah. Anytime I do like a poll on my TikTok or anything, like, that's what they're immediately gravitating towards is season three. And I have to agree, it's one of the best seasons for sure.
Yeah, I think that's true. And that's so off of what you said, Paige. I fully agree with you that like by season seven, that's when she's in charge. And when a lot of people, you know, season seven is very polarizing, right? So is season six. But season seven is like, I didn't realize how many people really hate season seven till I started covering it. Like I had co-hosts be like drop out because they were like, oh no, I hate that season. I don't want to talk about it. And I was like, oh really?
What?
I was like,
wild.
For me, wow. Season six is not my favorite, but it's like, I just feel like there's no bad season of Buffy, like for me.
Right.
And I do feel like what you said, that's why for me, it's earned that Buffy's fully in charge. We don't need the character development anymore because we've done the character development. And yeah, I do think it's like a buildup. And I think this season as well, it's almost like this is when they started planning, because I do feel like you're right about Buffy. And I do feel like it also is starting Willow's story as well, kind of, yeah, where like Doppelgangland right. kind of sets up everything that she does moving forward with like magic and like feeling underestimated. So yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, Buffy and Willow. And like, you know, I think by like, not season three, but like five, Willow becomes one of the almost a co-main character, like right yeah. below Buffy. And I do think it's like nice seeing those characters develop. And yeah, I love season three. Season five, this might be more bleak. It's like they have more like adult, like trauma problems, not like
right.
school metaphor problems, you know? And like, we're all adults. So it's like, I can kind of relate to the like bleak stuff.
You know, I think the thing with Willow, like not to get too off topic, but the thing with Willow, how you're talking about how she's kind of like the co-lead, I really see that. And when I look at Willow as who she is towards the end of the series, I feel like she is more powerful than anybody on the show. But the problem is she hasn't had the knowledge behind it, as to where Buffy has had all the experience to get to where she's at. And that's why she can control the power and maintain the power. But Willow, it was like almost overnight for her. She was practicing and having fun. And then once, you know, Tara was gone, that was it. She just absorbed the dark arts completely. And so it took over her. So she can't control the power. But I feel like she is probably in the Buffyverse, probably the most powerful character in the Buffyverse.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And so like in that, it, even that conversation of that of Willow and her power, I think that Giles does such a disservice to her. I know he's trying to protect her from, you know, using magics, because even in the very beginning of season three, when he tells Buffy that he's trying to do the spell to make sure that Akafla has been bound, so that Buffy like has that cathartic moment about actually telling what really happened.
And I cry so much.
Right. It's such a good moment. And Willow is so anxious to help. She's like, I want to help. And I've been studying these things. And I think Giles does Willow such a disservice to not only be Buffy's watcher, but be Willow's as well. He more than anybody knows what it's like when you have black magics unchecked. And so why not guide her along the way so that it doesn't become, you know, this problem, and it doesn't become an addiction. And because she keeps getting told no, it's like, well, I'm gonna do it anyway. So look at that. And then it leads to so many more problems. So I kind of blame Giles for Willow's past.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking, actually, based on his experience. He didn't have to be the one to teach her, but the fact that he didn't find someone for her is kind of crazy.
I feel like, so we talked about this a little bit. I forget. I want to credit who said it, because it was not me. So just, I don't remember who said it on the podcast, but someone that was not me said that Giles loves Willow almost the way he loves Buffy, where like he does, like he doesn't really like the rest of the Scoobies. He can't stand Xander. He like gets annoyed by Cordelia. Anya, it's like he begrudgingly accepts her. But I do think Willow, he sees as a daughter, and I think he didn't want her to get into the magic, and he like didn't know how powerful she was. So to him, it's like, if I just keep not letting her get into it, we won't get to where we get in season six. But unfortunately, that was incorrect. So I do think it's like, because he loves her so much and she's the only one that he does, it's like she's like a daughter figure, but she doesn't have like the Slayer powers, right? So I think anymore he sees it as like she's dabbling in magic, and that can be dangerous, which like they kind of heavy-handed then, like, right, like how many times does Oz say that to her? And it's like, all right, but nothing bad has happened yet, so let's stop saying
right. Yeah.
Right. Well, except I think all the too, times like... that they do.
I think too, Willow is always like the studious good girl. So I think he also doesn't think she's going to spiral like that until she actually does.
Yeah.
Even with all the mistakes she makes along the way, none of them really kind of think of it as leading to a bigger pattern. They just see it as like, oh, one-offs that Willow does.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh. So to give more a little bit more feel around it, what is sort of one of the moments that you think is the most impactful? Like what's a moment or a storyline from season three that you think impacts the rest of the series the most?
Well, I was going to talk about Willow, so we might as well continue the conversation.
We can always talk about
We're
Willow. I
already
love her.
there. Yeah.
Since we're here.
Like, I mean, as you said, there's both like the personal impact, but then the impact towards the series in general. So there's, Willow's mistakes. Like she starts doing the delusting spell, and that's the first time she uses magic in a personal way, in an emotional way, like trying to not deal with bad things she was doing, like using magic to take away her mistakes, which leads her down the slippery slope. But what it really leads to, obviously, is when she falls down that slippery slope, is it leads to her arrogance to bring back Buffy without actually checking where Buffy was, which leads to the first evil getting a whole foothold in that world and completely just attempting to destroy the Slayer line. Like, in a, she, you
And it's
know.
never acknowledged that that's Willow's fault. It's never
Yes.
acknowledged that the first is brought back because of Willow's arrogance.
Right.
Exactly. That's one thing that always like drove me nuts. It kind of like offhandedly gets mentioned when they go to the Eye of Beljaxa. Like
And then
Anya
never
says,
again.
"No, I
Never
know.
again.
I
Anya
know."
says it,
So
yeah.
I know. But
And
the other
she's like
thing
the
too.
least responsible too. Like
Yeah.
she's the
Yeah,
one
I
that's
know.
like, oh, we did that. Fuck.
But then that's it. It's like one time. That's it. And it's
I know.
never really fully addressed.
That is my one critique of season seven that I only noticed when going through it for the podcast. There are a lot of like plot lines like that that like seem like a big reveal, cool thing, and then just nothing is done with them.
I think it's especially egregious when you get to where everyone confronts Buffy and kicks her out, and you're like, basically, we're in this position because it's all your fault, guys, not my fault.
I didn't even want to be here.
You just keep pulling me back in. But one of the other things, I mean, obviously, like you said, Doppelgang Land, like between the Wish and Doppelgang Land, like you see a lot of what eventually is to come with Willow, that she can go dark, that she ends up being a lesbian in lesbian relationships. But the other thing that I think it also helped to build the case for is that certain vampires, and I think it depends on the human personality, where a lot of that human characteristic stays with the vampire. I mean, we see it in Spike. We actually, I think, see it a lot in Angel and Jealous. We obviously would see it in Vamp Willow. So it kind of starts to counteract that narrative that the council has, that even Angel has, trying to convince Buffy that other than him with the soul, like all other vampires are just evil and should be killed. And again, not saying that the vampires aren't evil, but that there's a lot more of that person. Particularly, I think it's a strong personality that stays with the vampire.
Yeah, I agree with that. And like that is the I know like Angel people feel like kind of one way or the other. Some people hate Angel. I like the show, and the thing I think Angel does really well is exactly what you just said. I think Angel like plays upon that even more with like Lorne and like there's a demon bar. Yeah, they're all just chill most of the time. But like they're just like want to get drunk and do karaoke, and no one's really like looking to kill anybody. And I do. I always like a morally gray area. I always like when we can like give a little bit more nuance to any sort of thing like that, you know? And like then we get Clem in season six, right? And he's clearly chill, just wants to eat nachos and hang out. Like
And
he's
maybe a
not
kid or two.
And baby.
Correct.
As an after dinner mint.
No big deal. Whom's among us?
I think Willow's, like I think Willow's journey is probably also, outside of Cordelia, I think Willow's journey is probably one of the most transformative that we see her go from this meek, mild young girl to this like powerful white witch, by the end, who, when you look at comics, is like astral projecting. So Paige, yeah, I totally agree. I think she is the most powerful person and the most underestimated continuously, even though everyone keeps seeing how powerful she is. When Glory gets hurt by by Willow when Buffy is like, I need you. You're my, like, you're the most powerful person here. You're the only one who's been able to hurt a god. But then are fully like, well, she's not going to go crazy. She's like, I think the continually underestimating Willow and how powerful she is and what she's willing to do with that power is so, it's so crazy. And it's one of those things that you are not good friends because you're not paying attention to each other.
I look at Willow, her journey is a little different. I look at the magic element with her almost as like a drug addict, almost like she's an addict. And you can see it in season three where she takes like her first hit with Anya, right? Where she's like, ooh, she gets that little bit of a taste where she's doing real magic. And then they go full on out in the later seasons, like fully throwing it in your face that it's like that's what it is. She's addicted to the magic. And I think that I like that, like you're seeing her and almost like, not that she's forgotten in a way, but like they're not paying attention to her. They're not saying like, hey, you shouldn't be doing this, or you shouldn't be, like how you said though, Giles honing her a little bit and taking her on. And that's kind of what happens when you have a child who is so restricted and they're sheltered and they're not necessarily allowed to go do things, and they're the smart ones or the book smart ones. Sometimes they're the ones who dip into the magic.
That's
Sometimes
true.
they're the ones who dip into that. And if you're not watching them, they get addicted to it. And I feel like that's what happens to Willow. And you start to see a lot of it, this season where she's really just trying to find herself in this season, and in who she is, not just in the Scooby gang, but just who she really is as a person. It's her senior year too. It's not just Buffy's, even though Buffy's the main character. It's Willow is finding her own way and her own niche in her friend group.
So yeah, Paige, what about you? What are your what's the what's sort of the plot point for you that you think is the
For
most
me,
impactful?
the most impactful for me is Faith and Buffy's dichotomy, their relationship. I feel like Buffy, for the first time, I think we talked about this. Buffy, for the first time, it's her moral compass, really, as to where she sees what you can get away with in the world. She's been so pushing the edge and pushing the boundaries here and there. Like, I just want to date. Clark Kent had an alter ego. I just want to date. Like, she wants to do like those types of things. But when Faith comes into her world, she really sees like, oh, maybe I can push the boundaries a little bit more. And it becomes the question of like, what is your moral compass? If you are the most powerful superhero in the world and you don't have to adhere by the laws that are set for everyone else, what holds you back? And I think that her seeing Faith be that yin to her yang, so to speak, that's what sets her moral code. Like, I know I don't want to overstep that line. When Faith accidentally kills the mayor's assistant, it's a line for her that she doesn't ever want to cross. But then it bleeds into other seasons, particularly season five, when the Watchers Council deems in to her, and there she has that amazing epic speech where she like throws the sword
Oh
and she's like,
my
I'm fairly certain I said no interruptions, where she has the realization that like the world would be lost without her, because she has continuously saved this world and she has continuously fought, and she's that strength. And then so she knows, I'm the one who toes the line. You guys all need to step in line behind me. Like, I recognize that I'm the one who sets this bar, and it's where I say the bar goes, that's what happens. And I think it's even more further pushed in season seven when they have the conversation around Anya, when she turns back into the demon, and they're him, Xander and Willow and Buffy are fighting in that room on what they're going to do. And he's like, you're yelling at her. And she's like, I make the decisions. She goes, there, I'm this is why I make these decisions. And they have that huge blowout. It's that line for her of I'm the one, and this is where I'm going to cross, what I'm going to cross. And I think a lot of that was set by having Faith in season three, and her seeing, I don't want to go down this path of being a slayer. This is the other path I'm going to go to. And so for me, that's why it was so impactful. And Faith, to me, is one of the best additions to the show. Even in season four, when they do the whole like body swap thing, like their acting is so amazing, how they portray each other. Like it's so great, because you can, that's when you see the true difference between the Slayers and the characters. You can see it in their personalities and those lines that they have to draw for each other. And I think that Buffy also has that, more so Angel, obviously, with Faith, where he had that impression on her, where he helped change her. But I think a lot of it also is Buffy still too. You know, Faith is trying to pull it out of her, being like, you know, you're not the good girl. I know who you are. You know, like you've got it in you a little bit. But like Buffy's also like, and you have it in you that you're a good girl still. You know, I think that there could be no Buffy without Faith. Like they balance each other out in the universe. And I think that really stems from season three.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, that was probably one of my favorite storylines from season three, their relationship and their character development. And then I really love how that gets mirrored in season six with Buffy's situation, particularly where it culminates in what happens in Dead Things when she beats on Spike. And then you mirror that with Who Are You, when Faith is beating on herself,
yes,
in the church. I mean, and then the fact it really, to me, beautifully culminates in a lot of ways in season seven, when they have the conversation in Buffy's bedroom after Faith's been hurt, and you realize like they've both been through so much, and like Faith has hit bottom and come back up as Buffy went and hit bottom and is now back to being who she was and finding that moral center. And so now they can relate on such a new level. And I, you know, they're both also more mature. You know, they talk about, well, maybe two Slayers couldn't ever have gotten along. And I was like, no, you two were teenage girls who had been through so much trauma.
Right.
I was like, that's why you couldn't get along. I was like, but I feel like, it just culminated to me in such a really wonderful connection and moment in that scene.
Like a beautiful maturity that they had in that scene. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean that, like, Buffy and Faith's relationship, I just like, I'm always interested in talking about that. Like I always, you know, I the way I've been, and like, I feel like the thing with Buffy, right, is that Buffy does nuance pretty well. And I do think that, like, you know, like a lot of three of the four of us said that, like, you know, three was our favorite and then five became our favorite. Like, you can view it differently each time you watch it. And I definitely, with season seven, I view everyone's actions differently. I always am like, why the fuck are you kicking her out of her own house? But other than that, I'm like, I can see where they're pissed at Buffy. I can see where Buffy's pissed at them. You know, it's like, and this time around, I've been viewing Buffy and Faith more as, I always felt it was like pretty like sapphic, right? And which I have to bring this up, all the time when I bring up this relationship. I had someone call me Joss Whedon on my Instagram because I said that they had date night, and they were like, oh, you're sexualizing these two women, you're as bad as Joss. And I was like, I don't know what show you watch.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my god.
I was like, it's so clear. I mean, it's written in the script. Like, they, Buffy says, you know, they're like, oh, got a hot date. She was like, yeah, you could call it that. Like, it's, there's no like implication. Like the joke is there. Like, it's,
yeah,
there,
like,
for
it's
a
there.
Reason.
100%.
And how could you miss that?
Right?
Right.
Yeah, I don't.
And like, also, like, a date night isn't inherently sexual. Like,
right.
Yeah. But so I'm always interested in that relationship. And this time around, I've almost been viewing it as Faith is the one that would be queer, and Buffy's kind of like the straight crush that like does like the attention, but doesn't like think too much about it. But Faith is the one that is like, but like, yeah, we're besties, but like, if you wanted a kiss. And I feel like, you know, growing up queer, that's not an uncommon thing, right? Like, so that's kind of how I've been viewing it this time around, because Buffy doesn't give me queer vibes, but Faith absolutely does. And so I've been kind of like reading it that way this time around, but who knows, if, you know, next time I watch season three, I'll view it differently.
Yeah,
I think now that... I'm like, oh, sorry,
go ahead.
I was going to say, now I'm just envisioning Alana Eubank in The Hot Chick, where she's like, that's their relationship, those two characters. I'm just envisioning Faith being like that now. Being like, I'll spend the night with you, Buffy. I'll steal your French fries from your table while you're not looking.
I was saying to Charles the other day, a little bit jokingly, that when the kind of continuation of the series comics came out, I was a little disappointed that when they do have Buffy have a relationship with a woman, that it's not Faith. I was like, come on, it should have been Faith.
Yeah,
it should have been.
I mean, nothing against
not some random potential.
Give them a night. They're adults now. Give them a night out drinking, and then
exactly. Like, that's totally how I would have like pictured it.
Well, it's every night like out on patrol, and Faith is always like, "Well, come on, don't you just get a little like?"
Yeah, she brings like, it up all the time.
All the time. Like, Faith is constantly like, don't you like, we're slaying, doesn't that make you horny? Like, don't you want to
doesn't it make you want to kiss another slayer, buddy?
Right, come like, on, like, yeah. Let's just do it. Let's go out and like dance.
Who is it that is it Willow or is it Buffy that's like, she's always grunting?
Yeah, <that's right. laughs> There is a lot of grunting. I do love this relationship though. I think the addition to Faith was such a smart move, and it gave us the mirror image of what Buffy could be like. I do think they get to really see each other through each other's eyes, both physically and sort of on their own journey separately. So I really love that storyline. And I love that we get to see Faith grow up into be the woman that she is. It's still Faith, but it's still, you know, she's still a little rough and tumble and, you know, talking about, you know, daddies and bullwhips and all of that stuff. And like that conversation, I think it's such a great conversation because it's like, it's still Faith. I mean, she's better, but she's still there.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, does it ever bother any of you? Because I know I've had some people on the podcast that have said it bothers them, that Faith's kind of like arc, like more or less takes place on Angel more so, like her like redemption arc. And then she just comes back to Buffy. But I don't mind that because they are the same universe. It's like, the characters like mix, like, you know, go back and forth between shows. Like it doesn't bother me, but I know some people it does. It's like, it bothers me.
For me, it doesn't bother me, but I don't know how old you guys are. I'm imagining I'm a lot older than some of you. But I watched it in real time. So when you were watching it in real time, it was a huge event. So it wasn't necessarily like that. It felt like it was on a separate show because you almost had to watch it continuously to understand it. And so you'd watch the Buffy episode and then you'd watch the Angel episode directly after it. So it felt like a 2 hour and a half, you know, however with commercials, it felt like it was a one cinematic universe thing. Now through streaming and through that type of stuff, it does kind of suck a little bit to like have to like switch over and be like, okay, we got to watch these Faith episodes really quick to anyone you're showing to. And that you can't just like tap in like that way and be like, yeah. But when it was airing live, you really didn't not connect the two. It was like, it was just a huge event to have them. So you didn't notice the difference of it on my end, at least.
I am 41. So I also watched it live.
You don't look 41.
Oh, thank you. that like, it got me flustered. That might be like why it doesn't bother me as well. It could be like, oh, well, I did watch it live. So it really was a different experience, right? Than like the way you would binge something.
Yeah, I would agree. And also too, I think it made more sense for her to go over to Angel and have her story because Angel was such a story of like the redemptive arc. Like everyone was searching some sort of redemption on that show. And so it just made more sense for her to be over there because it just wouldn't have worked on Buffy.
I think she would have even worked as like a main character on Angel.
Like, yeah, if they I would have liked her more on there.
I know, It's funny that you say that because I just started doing an Angel rewatch and I've not watched it probably since the last season's DVDs came out. Because it just, I mean, I liked it, but not as much as I love Buffy. And rewatching those episodes, I was like, oh my God, this was a waste of not bringing Faith on or having her more on, even if it was just as a reoccurring character. Like that connection, that storyline was so fascinating and worked so well. But I agree. I mean, unfortunately, I don't think it could have, she couldn't have reached redemption on Buffy, particularly because of what she had just done to Buffy. I mean, with the body switch and sleeping with Riley. And she recognizes that when
Beating
you,
up her mom,
yeah, exactly. She realizes that when she has her epiphany moment with Angel, and she's like, oh my God, what I did to Buffy. And when she accidentally reveals that Buffy has a new love interest. But I also love in that moment that when Buffy arrives and then the whole Watchers Council attacks, that Buffy, like you said, speaking to her moral center, she is still going to protect Faith. It doesn't matter what Faith had done because she knows the Watchers Council is more in the wrong at this moment.
Oh my God. That I love hearing you say this because I agree with you. And we had such a big discussion when we covered that
Oh,
because it was
really?
split down the middle, where a lot of people, which I didn't know this, a lot of fans feel that Buffy is like terribly written in that episode. Like that doesn't make sense the way she acts and everything. I think, and crazy enough, Ian Martin, who does Passion of the Nerd, he did like group discussions. Like he would like finish the season and then do a group discussion. And David Greenwalt came on for one of his like group discussions and actually told him that Joss Whedon wrote all of Buffy's lines in that episode. Like no one else wrote Buffy but Joss. And I do think, like you said, she just had sex with her boyfriend. She just, you know, body swapped with her. She beat up her freaking mom. Like Buffy has every right to be as furious as she is, but we know her and we know that when she says, I will beat you to death, she's just threatening her. She doesn't, there's no way Buffy would actually do it, right? Like, and I feel like she's allowed to have that anger, right?
And I also, and you know, also Buffy comes into the middle of a situation too. Like, so she, like, we have the benefit of seeing like Faith start to, you know, have some remorse for what she's done, where Buffy's just walking in on her, you know, and her naked ex-boyfriend, like, you fucked one of my boyfriends. What's to say that you weren't, and you've tried to fuck him before. So like, this is par for the course for you. So Buffy walking in is she's just seeing the same thing, but she, yeah, but agreed. Like, but the council is so much worse than Faith. And so, yeah,
Especially since the council is so much at fault. Like, they didn't get her a decent watcher. They didn't get her housing. They didn't take care of her. They didn't get her mental health services. I'm like, basically, it's the council's fault.
Yeah, and like, right, I do think that's what's so good about Faith, right? She murders someone. She gives the, like, you don't get it. I don't care. But you feel bad for her, right? Like, I wanted her, like you said, the Watchers Council. Imagine, like, they're like, yeah, go to Sunnydale. You'll be fine. Oh, you're living in a shitty motel? Well, not our problem. Like, this is a teenager. This is a kid. Like, you're letting her live in a shitty motel that, like, she probably could barely afford because, like, how's she even getting money? And so I do find myself, like, I'm rooting for Faith. And you know that when she says, I don't care, that she's like a cat. She's like, oop, I'm like prickly. Don't touch me because I'm gonna snap back. I'm gonna bite you. And I do feel like even with the I don't care, I still, you like Eliza Dushku embodies that role so well that we know that Faith is saying that because she wants to believe it, not because she does believe it,
Well,
right?
she wants to be loved. Like, she wants what they all have. And I think that's why the mayor so easily could swoop in and feel the void for her, you know, because everyone around her has let her down, you know, and he's like, you're this amazing person. You've all this potential. Like he treats her like she matters, and he shows her that she's important in the world, and she hasn't had that from anybody. And she thought she was going to have that from these people, and in her own way, she messed it up, but she still sees it as their fault. You know, she so this he comes in and enables her, and he gives her this gift of being loved like a daughter, and that's what she takes from that. And it bleeds through all of her actions throughout the rest of the series. She just wants love. That's what it is.
And I even think that is an interesting dynamic, her and the mayor, Like, I love when he like buys her the apartment and she's like, thanks, sugar daddy. And he's like, no, none of that. Like, he genuinely just like thinks of her as like a daughter, even though he's sending her out on murder errands. Like, he like genuinely cares about her, even though he wants to bring about an apocalypse. Like, he does. And I do think that is such an interesting dynamic, and it's fun to watch too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That the mayor does for Faith, but the council never would.
Right. Think about it. This guy who wants to become a demon and like conquer the world is better to her than the Watcher Council.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Her choice to go with him, like once he starts doing that, makes total sense.
I might too.
Right. I would too. I'd be like, well, yeah. I gotta kill. I've already killed one person, so why not? Like,
I need a PlayStation. You know, right?
Thank you.
And real quick, if everyone's okay, Paige, you brought this up and I wanted to, I was like, ooh, that's smart. I don't know why I didn't think about that. The Cordelia of it all. I do like her arc is just so good. And like, helpless for me is like a really, even though Cordelia, has like 5 minutes altogether in the episode, that is such a big moment in showing who Cordelia is for me of like, she comes in, she's literally just there to like do like whatever report, get some books on it. And she like is being jokey. But then when Buffy turns to her and looks, you can tell something's wrong, right? Like, she doesn't know what's wrong, but she knows something's wrong. And Buffy just quietly is like, can you drive me home? The like way charisma changes her, like she softens immediately and it just is like, oh, of course. For me, that like very much shows us how far Cordelia has come and how she's like, she is kind of ride or die for this group. She will drag them for their outfits. She will make fun of the way they talk. You know, she'll call them dorks. But like, when it comes down to it, she is like, yeah, I will help. Like, and I don't know. That's such a big moment for me for Cordelia that I think about a lot. I mean, and she looks fantastic.
Amazing in it. Amazing in that scene. And Cordelia is my favorite character. And I think that scene, I don't know if guys have had this, but I think for women, it's a very universal thing when another woman looks at you in a certain way where you've experienced it yourself and where you're surrounded by men who have like done you wrong. And they have that history or together, already going back to season two where they were almost assaulted, you know, by the college guys, you know? So it's like she sees in her that there's some sort of pain and some sort of hurt in her eyes. She doesn't know what it is, but it's that underlyingness as like a woman, I know what you're going through. So regardless of if I think you look like shit or if I'm picking on you all day, like come with me. You're fine. You're safer with me if that's what you feel than with anyone else. And it is that true evolution of her. I always say that like Anya was one of the most important additions to the show. She's grown up with the show. She's a very accurate representation for people who have neurodivergency, right? But for me, like Cordelia, other than Willow, but Cordelia has had the most growth because she started out as just a vapid character. Like she had no real depth to her in season one. And then as season two hit, she really started to become a part of the Scoobies. And then by season three, she full blown was like, had her own storylines, her own thoughts, her own growth. And then when she went into Angel, who she became an Angel, I absolutely loved. I actually stopped watching Angel because she left. That was the whole reason why I stopped initially watching it. And so I love it. And that scene is just the most accurate representation of who Cordelia is.
Yeah.
I love Cordelia. I think she's so strong. And like, again, even in like in Slayer Fest 98, where she's just like, she's got that spatula and she's like, it might be a spatula, but I'm gonna make it count.
And that ending is like one of my favorite moments of the series. The way she just like, she sees Buffy's unconscious, she's like, well, I gotta do this, and she like takes a big risk there, right? Because if the vampire like called her bluff, she wouldn't have been able to like, you know, in hand-to-hand combat like beat him up. But she's just like, I'm gonna channel this, and you see the confidence wash over her, and it is just so good to watch. It's like so enjoyable. I love it. And I love her green dress.
Everything she wears is just stunning. Anytime she wears green or maroon, those are the two colors that just make Charisma Carpenter pop.
Yeah, definitely.
I love her in earshot when Buffy can hear everything. I just love how like Cordelia just says what is on her mind. And like, that is the most realist thing that like, she's not hiding anything. She's not She's not dumbing it down. She's just saying what's in her head. And there's like nothing wrong with that.
I think my favorite Cordelia moment in season three is when she mouths thank you to Xander at the prom for what he did for her with the helping out to get the dress and not telling that she was working April.
I'm going to cry.
I know, because it shows her maturity and that she was able to move on and forgive Xander because, you know, and that she recognized what he did for her and that, you know, I just think that's such, that's a, like, such a true moment for her.
Yeah. Can I'm doing this again. I'm sorry, but no. I have to, like, you mentioned prom. So I got to say that that moment, there is not a moment that there's not a time I have watched the prom and not cried. In every, like, time. 25
every
years.
Time, like, every time,
every single time.
That umbrella, speech, oh God.
Like a baby, like a baby.
Yeah, I know the way Jonathan delivers it. You're just, oh,
he's so sweet and just so endearing. Good. He's like, is Buffy here? He's so nervous.
And the cut to her where she's like, wait a minute, what? And she kind of turns around and is like, huh? Like, it's, ugh. And when Giles is like, oh, like, you know, sometimes I can surprise you. Ugh, so good.
Yeah.
It is.
And the idea that, like they're giving her this award, but they're actually not sure how she's, like, I feel like they're more nervous to give it to her because they're like, we don't know how she's going to receive this because she's been like, you know, she's kind of a killer. So we don't quite understand, but like, we want to give you this. So thank you, but please don't hurt me at the same time.
And like, I love that the secret's out in the open now. I love that it's like, they all know, like, they're like, Buffy, we know, like, we know that you've been protecting us. We know what you really have been doing for us. And we see it. Like, it's that being seen thing. That's what anybody wants to do, is be seen. My husband, he watched it for the first time. He watched it on my last rewatch. And when we got to that episode, I was bawling like a fucking baby. And he looks over at me and I'm like sitting in my comfy chair. And I was like, and he's like, are you okay? And I was like, just wait. It was like, it wasn't there yet. It hadn't gotten to the speech yet. And he's like, why are you crying? And I was like, just wait. Because it was in my head, I knew right when the moment was going to be. And so he starts watching, he looks at me, and like, his face started getting real red. And I was like, see, I was like, you're sucked in this moment right here. I was like, see, this is why I'm crying. I was like, every time, 25 years later, every time.
Oh my God, y'all, I'm about to cry. Just like, I'm literally like trying not to cry, just thinking about it.
Yep.
Just,
I know. Like, it just, I know. It really and then does. The way like Buffy's reaction to it, just like, that hits you. It's like the push and pull between Buffy and Jonathan, and the fact that she like can't believe she's getting this, and how much, you can just read on her face how much it means to her.
She doesn't have like a snappy comeback at all, because she's kind of like shocked that they are doing this for her, right?
Yeah.
And it's so perfect that it's Jonathan giving it to her, like from that earshot moment. Like, Earshot is my favorite episode in the entire series. I, out of all the characters the most on the show, I relate a lot to the Jonathan character. Like, that's how I was and how I was treated in school. And so I wish that episode would have aired live. That episode would have been so incredibly powerful for kids who are getting bullied to see, like, because, you know, when he's up in that watchtower and she's giving that big old speech, he's like, I would never harm anybody. He's like, I came here to do this to myself. Like, the fact that she saved him and kind of opened his eyes to things a little bit, but he opened her eyes to things. And then at the prom, he's the one giving her the award. I was like, that's what makes it so much more emotional for me, is that, that he's just like, essentially he's saying thank you to her in his speech, like, thank you for saving my life, you know.
Which then
I'm gonna skip season two and just go right to this episode. I want to go watch this episode.
I'm just gonna watch the prom after this.
Yes,
I know.
So Ian, what's your moment that you feel like most impacts?
I think it's the prom. I think, well, wait, no, you know what, I'm gonna, God, there's like 10 moments. I think the prom would be tied with this moment, but I gotta say, it's when Buffy yells now and they all pull off their gowns and they're trying to fight.
Yes.
So good.
Like, I had, cause like, you know, that was also delayed. And I remember I started watching in season three and then I stopped cause I was like, oh, I missed the finale. Let me wait till I can catch up. Cause I just didn't realize it had been delayed. And I got the VHS tapes, which are behind the Buffy right there, that I still have. I remember I got them from Suncoast Video, and I was like, ooh, yes, I can buy them.
Not Suncoast.
Like, yeah. And it was like the sets they put out where it was like two episodes per VHS tape, so it was only like six. But I was so excited to watch the finale, and I can remember sitting in my like childhood bedroom. It's on the little like crappy box TV I had, and I just remember being like, oh my God, like so like proud of my babies that they all like fought together. Like, it's such for the me, music. That's like, yes, it's like so sweeping. And then like, you know, a few minutes later, we get the vampires saying, get the kids. And they run like towards the vampires. Like, ugh, it's so good. And it shows like, that's what I think of a lot. Every time I see like kids like doing like gathering to do like activism stuff and like doing protests. And like, I think of that moment, which I guess makes me feel sound old too, because I'm like, oh, the kids are doing things, but like, you know, and I feel like kids can, like Giles says in the prom, like kids can surprise you and be like united the same way. Like Paige, when you were talking about with Cordelia, right? Like, I do feel like all of the kids at this point, we earned this because we know that they all know Buffy is somehow saving everyone and that there are monsters and their students die all the time, right? So they like at least know that. So it's just really nice to see them all fighting side by side.
And I think, you know, that's a take. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, I'm always cutting people off.
No, it's okay. No, it's good. I was going to say, I think it's one of those moments too where it establishes like that she's built trust, that yes, she's earned everyone's mm-hmm. trust. And that's something that keeps carrying on throughout the series too, is that you might be scared, you might have doubts, but like she's earned it, so just like follow her into the fray because you're probably gonna win,
right?
And, you know, I feel like we're all Andrew when they cut to Andrew and he's crying after that's all of us right now.
Love it. I agree. I think, you know, I was going to say when you were talking about like all of the like kids standing up and getting together and stuff like that, and like the activism stuff, I kind of personally have a theory of as to why, like, I think like our generation, like the Zennial and Gen Xers and, you know, younger down to like Gen Z and Gen Alpha, I feel like we are this way, this activism way, this way, because of shows like Buffy, because we did watch shows like this. You know, I say, you know, we were raised on Captain Planet and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, so we like want to save the world completely. And, you know, it's these shows where you're seeing these teens unite at the end and fight this common big bad. And it goes back to the adults never believing the kids, so they have to band together. And I think that we have grown up all seeing that, and that's why we all band together and protest and are loud and are activists and stand up for what's right, and we stand up for the underdogs. And, you know, we are that way because of the media and what was surrounding us at that time.
Yeah, I, you know, that's, I, not to be too much, but that's why anytime someone's like, oh, the shows are so woke now, it's like, what were you watching? Because like I right. I've had like weirdo like conservative Buffy fans like in my mentions sometimes, and I'm like, I have no idea what show you watched. Like, if you don't think Buffy was political,
you were blind.
You really missed it.
Like went over your head,
because even my Oh, sorry, go ahead. Yeah, or just say X-Men, because X-Men is...
Yes!
Oh, gosh, yes.
This is happening with me and X-Men right now. Like, with X-Men right now, there's... I've been doing a lot of, like, how I'm tired of, like, Wolverine being featured, and I'm, like, ready for other storylines to be featured, and I'm talking about other things, and people have made some, like, really harsh comments that has blown me away, that I've been like, were you ever really even a fan, or did you just watch the Fox films and you love them? Or like, do you actually know the history of what X-Men stand for? And that's kind of what the Buffy thing. There are so many people who have conservative takes on Buffy, and it blows my mind, because it wasn't it like the first to feature a teenage, an LGBT teenage love story? The first show?
And it was like it was only the fourth show to ever even have like same-sex kiss.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, it was such a progressive, powerful show that it's like, did you miss the points of it? Like, did it just go over your head or what?
And like, even the reason I actually got into Buffy was because my mom loved Buffy. My mom was like very into Buffy from the beginning. And she would always say it's because like when she was younger, like they didn't really have women who were allowed to be like in charge and like fighting on these shows. And like when her and her cousins would play, she wanted to be like the woman fighter. And they would be like, oh no, you have to, like, we save you. Like, girls don't do things like that. And so my mom always felt like Buffy was, she just loved that about Buffy. And, you know, like, she passed away last year at 76. So it's not like she was the age group for Buffy, right? And she was able to like recognize that, like, that was progressive, like, at the very basis, right? That's like the feminism 101 of the show is like, yeah, women can do this shit too. But like, even just that little bit, like, drew my mom in, and that's why she loved it so much.
I love it. I love that you and your mom, I love it that you, it's like something that you guys connected with. I love that so much. It's multi-generational, you know?
Yeah. Oh, it's even so much.
Even young kids now are still watching it. My youngest sister, she's 22, and she used to crawl in my bed on Sunday mornings and watch the reruns with me as a little kid. And she, but when she babysits now, like, she just graduated college, but when she was like babysitting in college, she's like, yeah, she goes, you'd be surprised. Like, the little kids have Buffy on. She's like, the like little 13-year-old girls. I was like, so it's like ranged like from so many different generations that it's still going.
No, I was going to say, that's always what's been so like special and unique to me about Buffy is like other teen shows, like, you try to watch them when you're not a teen. And I think sometimes it can be hard because they just feel so teen. You're like, I can't connect. Yet, like, like you said, it is multi-generational people watching Buffy, like people in their like 40s and 50s were watching it when it first came on.
Yeah.
And like, there is something so magical about the story and the characters that it just defies like age limits.
Right.
I think it's that speech at the end, like, that she gives, like, every person who, you know, could be a slayer is a slayer now. Like that moment too, like, I think it resonates throughout. Yeah. I feel like that speech and that spell sort of reverberates not only forward in time but backwards in time. And it allows everyone to be like, I haven't missed my opportunity to like stand up and be the strong person that I know that I can be. It's not too late because I'm still here. So bring it on. Let's go. I am ready. That's the other moment that makes me cry is that, you know, that little girl with the baseball.
Yeah, fist punch the air. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God.
I feel like anytime they give a big speech in Buffy, it's always like so like, it's amazing. Like Spike's speech when they kick Buffy out in season 7, when he's like, you ungrateful little, like, he's like, she's died for you twice. She's saved the world for you. Like, and you spat on her and kick her out of her own home. Like, how the audacity. I love that he calls them all out. It's so powerful. Like, that's when I really started liking Spike, was that episode. I've never really been a Spike fan, but that episode when I was like, oh, okay, like, I get you now. Like, I really get who you are as a character. Like, you are just truly 100% loyal to Buffy, and you have completely changed and become this totally different person with a soul, and you were already changing before you had your soul. Like, so to me, like, I love him now, but that speech, man. And then when, you know, they give the, all of us, we can all be slayers speech at the end. Yes. It's slayers. Just
everyone.
Yes. Oh, that whole season is filled with good speeches. Like, cause even when they're like doing the Thunderdome speech, when they're like, they're about to like go into the two people come in and only one comes out. And then she like kills the like Uber vampire. And she's like, so there it is. Just dust. Like, it's just so powerful. Like, this show is just written so incredibly well.
Yeah.
One of the moments that I wanted to bring to the table is actually something that I think is planned, but I think it's so well done and so hidden. And it's all the references to Dawn coming, like those early mentions. Yeah. And I think it's one of those things that we didn't see it coming. We didn't know it was there. And yet he was planning for it the entire time. And so when it got there, we were like, well, what the hell is this? And what is it? And then, but like all of those mentions, like those little Easter eggs of like Dawn coming and Buffy's death, like all of those things, I think are brilliant. And so, and it was, he was, I felt like this was the moment that they were saying, okay, our fans are too smart for us. They're figuring us out, and we need to do something that's going to blow their minds. And when we, when they figure out that what this all means, it's going to be like, boom. And I think that's a testament to the writing. I think it's a testament to the genre. And it's a great nod to the fans to be like, you know, you think you know everything, but you don't. And I love being able to look back and see all of the stuff that we missed.
Yes. Little Miss Muffet counting down from 7:30. I love it. I love all the like language in it. I don't know if you guys were a part of the boards back in the days when like the early heydays of the internet
went I lurked.
The message boards.
I was only a lurker. I didn't partake, but I was a lurker.
You were a lurker. Do you remember when like after season 3 aired and it went into season 4, a lot of people were like, what did this mean? Like it did its job. It served its purpose for real, because people like could not figure out like the coding, because they knew the things were coded in it. But like everything, they were dissecting everything. And then once by season 5, when it got to the cheese guy, or was that season 4? Was the cheese guy?
Season four
with the cheese guy. Like Restless, yeah, with the cheese. That's the movie people were like, okay, maybe he's just fucking with us. Like maybe they're not really putting stuff in, and they're just like, because like we know that Buffy likes cheese. That's the underlying joke, is that she likes cheese. But like, okay, he's just fucking with us. And so, but the boards were going nuts with all of that stuff. People were trying to figure out like what Faith was saying. They were like decoding every single thing she was doing. And it was an amazing time because it made it interactive and it made it so much more fun to like guess what all this was going to mean. And nobody had a clue that it was going to be Dawn. Like it was mind blowing that like this is where they were going to go with the show.
I feel like Buffy was probably my first like interactive like fandom online. Mm-hmm. Like I was a big Star Trek kid growing up in Star Wars, but like, you know, we didn't have the internet. And then Buffy was like maybe the first like nerdy thing I was watching while also being able to like read stuff about it as it was airing.
I don't like we like I feel like in my house we were so obsessed, like me and my sister, my middle sister, were so obsessed with Buffy that like even though I was watching it live, I still would record every single episode.
Oh,
because
100%.
I was like, I have to watch it again. I have to rewatch it again over. And my mom would be like, you have stacks and stacks of VHS tapes in here. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm like, I want to rewatch Buffy when I want to rewatch it. And then once they started coming out with the DVDs and stuff, I was like, all right, I can finally get rid of some of these.
Yeah, that feels very familiar.
That was my life. Oh my goodness. Y'all, we are running out of time here. It's and I want to be respectful of everyone's time. So thank you both, Paige and Ian, for being here and joining us in this conversation and being our very first guests.
Yes,
we really appreciate
so
it.
Much.
Thanks for making it fun and easy.
We feel so honored. I feel so honored. Like I love Same. You guys. This has been so much fun. And like anytime you guys want to hang out again and do this again, I'm totally down.
Love it.
Same. Yeah.
Awesome. So Paige, great. what are you working on now? What do you have coming up?
Ooh, so I've got a secret documentary that my producer told me I couldn't announce today.
Okay.
I wanted to announce it today. We've got some projects on the docket right now that we're working on. We have a documentary that's getting ready to launch. And then we've been kind of fine tuning a script for an indie horror film. And I just finished writing a memoir after 2 years. It's going to be published hopefully by this summer. It's currently being edited and the forewords and all that stuff are getting written by the people who are writing the stuff. But so that's pretty much what I've got going on. And then just kind of making some TikToks and staying on Buffy Talk and having some fun.
Excellent. Yes. That's and amazing. If you haven't seen Paige's documentary, Redheads, we've mentioned Nightmare on Elm Street a couple of times. It's a great documentary. It's on Tubi. Is that where people can find
yeah,
it?
Yeah. So you can stream it for free on Tubi, or if you're like me and you like physical media, you can get it on Amazon, the physical media version of it, the DVD.
Oh,
so
cool.
I appreciate you. I love it. It's a labor of love. It's yeah. all about the fandom of A Nightmare on Elm Street and how one film and one genre, particularly horror, can impact people's lives and save their lives. And a lot of people connected with it, and I love it. I love that 4 women produced a film that was number 1 for 5 weeks in a row. Like that's what I love. Like I'm like 4 women in a horror space. produced a documentary that was number, it's like I got my like Xena voice in the four women in the thrones of a horror state produced a document. Like, I love it. So thank you so much. I appreciate you shouting that out.
Yeah. Ian, what about you? What do you have coming up? What's going on?
SlayerFest 98 is going to be covering The Magician season one soon. We're like halfway through our recordings. And then we're going to get back to Angel season three. And right now on the Patreon, we're covering Buffy season three, each episode as they turn 25. Yeah, SlayerFest 98. We're at SlayerFestX98 on all social media platforms.
Fantastic. And Paige, if people want to follow you, where can they follow you?
You can follow me on TikTok at The Final Girl, but it's instead of an I, it's a U. So it's like The Final Girl, The Final Girl 13.
Girl?
It's the only social I'm predominantly on, but The Final Girl was taken and I was like, what can I do? I was like, well, girl, I'm like, I was talking sarcastic and funny. I was like, so that'll work, you know, and it's a ghoulish thing. So I always call people ladies and germs. So.
That's awesome. Well, thank you everyone for joining us for this incredible episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. And if you want to follow us, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at A Buffy Podcast, or you can email us at abuffypodcast@gmail.com.
All right. Well, thanks so much. And we will see you all next time.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.